relations going? He asked, at last making the connection between Natia visiting him and why I was here.
Quite well, Your Majesty.
I wasn't about to tell him that the settlement had been moved. The less said, the better. Paxton stared at me, his expression hungry for more information, but I left my answer short and vague.
Is it now? The king answered. That's good to hear.
He turned to Paxton, already bored with the subject.
Walk with me to the Candoran stables, will you? We're preparing to forge more plows and farm equipment, and I have a question about your next shipment of pig iron. I have a supplier who claims he can give me a better deal.
They said their goodbyes to me, and I watched them walk away, Straza and the king's small contingent following close behind. But between the mass of bodies, I caught sight of the king as he turned to Paxton, glancing back over his shoulder, his clownish grin gone, his eyes sharp and alert. Astraza suddenly blocked my view, but when he stepped away again, I saw the king fingering something in his vest pocket. Had Paxton just given him something? Or was the king about to give it to Paxton? I took my newly acquired ring and placed it on my little finger, where it was loose, and then cut through the stalls to the other side of the arena. I circled around on the main path and walked, looking down, admiring my ring, carefully sidestepping other shoppers until I spotted smudged boots in my small line of vision and plowed headlong into their owner, nearly knocking both of us down. The king caught me in his arms as we stumbled together, my hands gripping his sides. I looked up.
Oh, Your Majesty, I am so very sorry. What an oaf I am. I wasn't paying attention. My ring...
His hands lingered on my arms, pulling me a bit closer than necessary, as if I still needed to be steadied, and he smiled, not with his inane grin this time, but one that hinted at a different kind of interest.
We meet again so soon. No harm done, he replied, suddenly gallant. There, I see your ring. Let me.
He bent, picking it up, then blew the dust away, before placing it back in my hand.
Thank you, I said, smiling demurely.
Paxton's eyes glowed with suspicion.
Watch your step, he warned. You might run into something more dangerous next time.
We tear the pages out and burn another book. Meandre cries as she holds her shivering hands to the fire. She wants to go outside and gather wood instead, but Grayson won't let her. We hear the howls. We don't know if it is wolves, monsters, or men. Fujiko, 11. Chapter 41. Kazi.
My blood still raced with exhilaration. Stealing from a king was a first for me, especially with a contingent of guards and Straza standing nearby, though the prize turned out to be less exciting than what I had anticipated, merely a piece of paper with a name scribbled on it, Devereaux 72, perhaps the trader who had promised a better deal on pig iron? Or maybe Paxton had slipped the king the name of his new hawker who would meet the deal? I didn't know exactly what compelled me to go after it. Maybe it was the sly glance the king tossed over his shoulder, his eyes suddenly sharp, a hint that something more pressing was on his mind than bidding on Surrey. Or maybe it was just seeing him walk beside Paxton. Everything about Jace's cousin was suspect, and his arrogant warning words, "Tread carefully," didn't help to instill trust.
Enjoying yourself?
Another arena patron fell into step beside me, but this one was welcome. Immensely, I answered. It's been 2 hours. I've toured every floor, eaten at least a dozen oranges, and I've had my eye on a very clever and handsome llama.
I have competition,
Jace asked. Must be that long neck of his. I laughed. And his soulful eyes. Be worried. What delayed you?
My meetings ran long. So you met the king.
I stopped and faced him. How did you know? He shrugged deviously.
I told you, I have tricks too.
But then he glanced up at the towers.
Every one of those is manned with my men, and each has a spyglass. It helps keep trouble to a minimum.
So they were watching me. How much did they see? But there was no hint of suspicion in Jace's tone or expression. What kind of trouble? I asked.
Pickpockets, petty thieves, or sometimes a squabble breaks out and fists are involved.
Then I suppose everyone must feel very safe here.
That's the goal. When people relax, they spend money. What did you think of the king?
He asked. A buffoon, just as you said, and not much of a farmer. His hands look like they've never wrestled anything more dangerous than a teacup. Did you know he'd be here?
Jace nodded. Gunner told me he was spotted coming in early this morning. Something about Surrey breeding stock this time. It's always something new. The man doesn't know how to manage his own farm, much less an entire kingdom.
Maybe he just needs more practice. How long has he been king?
3 or 4 years. That should be enough time to figure it out.
He explained that Montague became king at 20, when his father was crushed against a wall by a draft horse.
What about Paxton? What did he want?
Every time Jace uttered Paxton's name, there was a lethal edge to it. He wanted to be my friend, I answered, and to warn me not to get mixed up with certain people. I wonder who he could mean. A vein twitched in Jace's neck.
If he comes near you again,
then I will handle him again, pretty boy. Relax.
I'll handle him, Cassie,
Jace said firmly.
I've had my fill of his snide innuendo. Next time, he'll be swallowing a mouthful of teeth.
I wove my fingers into his, feeling his calluses, remembering him swinging axes and digging cellars, and I was grateful for the roughness of his hands. Enough about Paxton. Show me the rest of your arena. We headed toward the rear tunnel exit that led to the sprawling warehouses and stable grounds behind the arena, and to a livery. It was where Fertig used to work, and Jace wanted to ask a few questions. As we walked, Jace's mood lightened. Merchants greeted him with smiles and light-hearted humor, much of it directed at the lovely jewel gracing his very plain arm. Jace was pleased to see that Gunner had everything running smoothly in his absence, which eased my mind as well. I didn't want him to regret his time rebuilding the settlement. As we walked, I saw the relief and maybe even the pride in his face. There were hundreds of years of Ballinger history here, a legacy to keep secure, and it had all fallen on his shoulders so very recently. He was eager to point out every detail, drawing me deeper into another part of his world, and I happily fell into it. We were halfway through the tunnel exit when a chill brushed my arms. It wasn't a breeze. I felt it circle. Cool fingers grazed my shoulders. My neck tingled. Then a quiet voice.
Go back.
A faint, cold warning and then more followed in a rush. Stop! Go back! Glints of light spread in a line across the end of the tunnel, linked hands blocking our passage.
Do not pass this way.
What's wrong?
Jace asked. I hadn't realized I had stopped. People walked around us, continuing on through the tunnel. A breeze lifted my hair.
Not this way.
Kazi?
I felt for my dagger at my side, though the voices had now fallen silent. There were centuries of history here. I was bound to hear some of it. Death had passed this way many times. Nothing, I said, and we continued forward. We emerged into a large square, the sun warming my skin again, the scent of pine easing my mood, everything in order and as calm as a bustling arena can be. Tall trees cut striped shadows across a plaza that was bordered by large warehouses and barns. I saw the livery ahead, but as we walked toward it, I spotted something else tucked back in a dark, shady corner. Wagons inside another warehouse were being loaded and covered with tarps. Something about them. I stopped. What is that, Jace? He hardly gave it a glance.
Just another warehouse, he answered, grabbing my elbow to urge me forward.
I pulled free. What kind of warehouse? I didn't wait for his answer. I was already walking toward it. I stopped just inside the gaping entrance. It was dark, cool. My stomach hovered near my heart, everything inside of me light and airless, something taking hold of me, my steps moving all out of order. I was numb, part of me soaring above it all, watching. Three wagons were being loaded. Rope was woven over the tarps, tarps with black stripes. It was the stripes that stopped me. They were sharp nails dragging across my throat.
Previsi, Jace said, coming up alongside me. They operate out of this warehouse.
An enormous warehouse. I could see rows of other empty wagons stored along the side, waiting to be loaded. By now, several of the workers had noticed us standing at the entrance. I scanned their faces, none the one I searched for. My skin, my eyes, floating, not part of me. My voice, barely mine, sounding like someone I didn't know. Young, fragile, breakable. A girl too afraid to run. But Previsi are illegal, I said. They've been illegal for years. They're not allowed in the kingdoms. My voice still soft, lost. Jace hovered in a different world, strong, confident.
Maybe officially, but trust me, merchants in every kingdom eagerly buy from them. They provide...
I spun, my voice stronger. Provide what? Stolen merchandise?
Sometimes there's merchandise that... It doesn't quite...
What do you mean by operate? I asked. He looked at me, confused, finally understanding that something was very wrong.
This is their base, he answered.
Base? For how long? How long have they been based here?
Kazzie, what difference?
How long? My voice was loud now, a scream, the air shattered in fragments, every sound sharp in my ears.
I'm not really sure.
11 years, Jace? Have they been here for 11 years? He nodded.
At least.
Everything that had been weightless inside me was now molten, rushing in my head, burning my skin. They're thieves! You're harboring thieves! They sell nothing but-
Kazzie, lower your voice,
Jace ordered between gritted teeth. Workers had stopped loading wagons and were listening. A crowd gathered just outside the door, watching. Jace leaned close.
The Previsi drivers are
predators, I yelled. Scum, and I will not lower my voice. How can you just look the other way? Stop, Jace ordered. He grabbed my arm and began pulling me away. I twisted free and my other arm swung, hitting him in the jaw. He stumbled back, incredulous, his eyes locked on mine. And then I ran. I was a girl running through the Jahendra, through stalls, through shadows and mud and nightmares. A girl running with nowhere to go.
Chapter 42. Jace.
I took a few steps, watching her run away, then tasted the blood in my mouth. I touched my hand to my jaw. Should we go after her? Titus asked. He and Gunnar had been nearby when the shouting broke out. I shook my head. No, let her go. I already knew they'd never find her if she didn't want to be found. I was still trying to understand what had happened. I looked at the people who had stopped to watch. All the people who saw the Patre get smacked in the chops by a Vendan soldier half his size. And then a voice from behind me. The wrong voice. Clucking. Sighing. Oh dear, a lover's quarrel? Affection is so fleeting, isn't it? When I turned, Paxton took a step back, his Straza a step forward, maybe seeing something in my face. It didn't do them any good. My fist shot out, sending Paxton flying to the ground. If they weren't broken before, they are now, Mason said. I winced as he pulled on my fingers and rewrapped my knuckles. Gunner had brought some ice for my jaw. The inside of my mouth was raw, where my teeth had sliced into it. She's got a hell of a swing, Titus mused with admiration, ignoring that it was my mouth that was her target. What's going on? Priya asked, walking through the foyer of the apartment. Apparently Jace's favorite Vendan soldier doesn't approve of Previsi, Mason answered. She gave him a stinging lecture about them in front of everyone.
And she hit you?
She wasn't herself, I answered. But who was she? I didn't think she heard half of the things I said to her.
She was transformed the minute she saw the Previsi warehouse.
Their goods were sometimes questionable, but damn it, every kingdom dealt with them. Yes, we looked the other way, so did everyone else. They had merchandise people wanted, and they bought plenty of goods to trade here at the arena at a fair price, too. Priya's brows rose.
So Vendans are sticklers for the letter of the law?
No. Kazi skirted too many edges to be a stickler. Something else bothered her. She'd acted strange from the minute she stepped into the tunnel. Her eyes had been glazed.
We'll go do damage control out in the arena, Priya said. Say you two are cozy again and having a good laugh about it. Just a lover's spat. Enough saw you two all kissy and hand in hand today that they'll buy it.
She paused, her hands on her hips.
And it's true, Jace, isn't it? Just a spat?
I nodded. Maybe. I was still retracing all our steps and words. Well, Gunner grumbled as he, Priya, and Titus walked out the door. Go find her and actually get cozy again. We've got a queen on her way. Mason stayed behind. He tied off the bandage and eyed the door, waiting for it to shut.
I didn't want to bring this up in front of the others, but I thought I should mention it. Something a little peculiar.
I slid my tongue along the swollen flesh in my mouth. Say it. He told me the apothecary in town had approached him today and asked when we would be getting another shipment of birch wings in. He was out of stock and had a request from a patron. You know how often we get it, Mason. Once a year, twice if we're lucky. It was made from a fungus that grew like wings on birch limbs in the north. The Kavaki brought it along with other potions they concocted. I didn't care about fungus right now.
He'll get it when he... It's not about the birch wings. It's about who asked for it. Ren. And she asked for enough to knock out half the town.
Maybe she just doesn't understand dosage. He shook his head.
I gave her a small vial from the storeroom on the night of the party. She said she had a headache. I told her it was 4 doses worth.
I remembered seeing the half-empty vial when I rummaged through Cassie's wardrobe for a shirt.
Why do you suppose she'd want so much? Mason asked.
I shrugged. I don't know. Maybe to take back to Venda with them? They may not have medicine like that there. I stood. I had to go find Kazi. She was probably back at Tor's watch by now. Just keep an eye on our stockroom. Make sure it stays locked. I was just stepping out the door when I ran into Garvin. I waved him off, saying we'd have to talk later. I think you'll want to hear this now. It's about that girl from Bright Mist. My pulse raced a little faster. Go ahead. I finally figured it out. I was in the tower, keeping an eye on her in the arena when it came to me. I saw her stumble into the king. Deliberately. I think she nicked him.
She stole from the king?
I can't be sure, he answered. Not from way up in the tower. She was smooth, but she meant to run into him, I know that much. I watched her run between the stalls, circling around right into his path. And then her hands were all over him. I ran my fingers through my hair, blowing out a frustrated breath. She didn't mention taking anything from the king. I looked back at Garvin.
You said you figured something out?
Her name, Ten. She was a petty thief in Venda. Probably the best.
Chapter 43. Kazi.
My breath came in gulps. Eben's arms clamped around me.
Breathe, Kazi. Take it slow, he whispered in my ear.
Water steamed in a kettle. Hot bread lay on a rack. Half-chopped turnips were abandoned on the cutting board. Their voices were details, like the bread and steam and the stab in my throat, all of them splintering through me as if I had stepped into a world that was exploding apart. Eben had seen me storm through the hallway and pulled me into the kitchen. Natia's eyes loomed in and out of my vision. Ren bit her nail. Sinove pulled on her braid. I closed my eyes. As I hurried up the mountain, all I could think was, 11 years. For 11 years, the driver had been coming and going with the Ballinger's blessing. He was here all along. This was where his journey began, where he slept and ate and bathed, where his life went on when mine had stopped.
Are you all right?
All right? I made a vow. I had no choice but to be all right. But my insides bled, drained through my pores, every part of me hollow again. I remembered the brokenness, the hunger. The years vanished and I was hiding under a bed again.
Where is the brat? Where is she?
In the warehouse I had reached for my knife. I was ready to kill them all, just as I had been when I'd gone after the ambassador. It was only the flash of the prison I had landed my whole crew in that made me stop. The man who took my mother was here, somewhere. And if he wasn't here today, he'd roll in on a wagon tomorrow or the next day, and when he did, I would do something that would jeopardize everyone in this room because he mattered to me more than 1,000 valleys piled with dead. I craved justice for one. I need you, Kazimira. I believe in you. I floated between worlds, between oaths and fear, promises and justice, between love and loathing. Drink this, Natia ordered. Eben loosened his hold, and I took the water Natia held out to me. I finished the glass and asked for more, turning away, leaning against the counter, molding composure the way I did when my next meal depended on it. 100 tricks, one piled on another, fooling myself that I could do it. Digging my nails into my palms until one pain masked another that I couldn't bear. I downed the second glass of water and finally turned back to face them. I told them about the Previsi warehouse. Anger pinched Ren's face.
Previsi? Based here?
And the welcome mat is rolled out for them, I confirmed. Something else happened, too. I punched the Patre in the face. A deep silence fell in the room.
Did you knock any teeth out?
Sinove finally asked, a certain desperation in her wink and smile. If I did, it wasn't enough. Natia sighed.
You'll have to smooth it over with him until we leave. An apology.
I would not apologize. Ever. We leave tomorrow, I said.
But with our quarry, I added.
I know where the captain is. At least, I think I do. I told them my hunch. It was Jace who had given me the answer, and Priya, and my own forgotten wishes that my mother and I had had a second way out. As I had escaped from the arena, as Mija gave me all he was worth racing up the back trail to Tor's watch, I heard Priya speaking again. They escaped down another path. And then Jace.
Every good stronghold has more than one way out. Otherwise, you could be trapped.
Another way out. Ren and Sinove came with me. You might hear voices, I warned Sinove. They're harmless. You'll be fine. Just stay close. We casually sauntered through the gardens, smiling in case anyone watched, turning, pointing at butterflies that didn't exist. And when each of us had scanned the grounds and the windows that looked down on us and had given the all clear, we walked down the path that led to the rear entrance of Dark Cottage. We quietly slipped inside and I eased open a shutter in the kitchen, just a crack to give us some light. We only used hand signals. I pointed to the stairs that led to the cellar. I went first, made sure the room was empty, then signaled for them to follow. Except for a circle of dim light at the base of the stairs, the room was completely black. I had already told them to feel the walls for hinges, handholds, loose stones, anything that could be moved, to look for cracks of light and feel for drafts. We moved silently and slowly, careful not to make any sound that might reveal us. The cellar was large, and it was slow work moving in the dark. I reached the end of one solid wall and started on another, meeting Sinove in the middle. Nothing. I was still certain. And then Ren ticked a soft sound, one that could be mistaken for a creak in an old house. She found it. On the wall that supported the stairs, a draft between panels. We listened, and when we were sure there was nothing immediately behind the panel, I pressed on it. It sprang open a crack, and we stepped into the end of a very long tunnel. At the other end was a door with a thin line of light streaming from the bottom of it. Once we started down, we'd have no cover. We'd be open targets if someone should enter from the other end. The only weapons we had were the daggers at our sides. Carrying a bow and a quiver of arrows through the gardens would have been too conspicuous. Ready? I whispered. They nodded. We crept down the tunnel, the only sound my pulse drumming in my ears as we neared the door. I put my hand out to have them wait while I carefully eased forward to make sure there were no alcoves for dogs to hide in. It was clear, and I put my ear to the door, then gently squeezed the latch. Our breaths caught at the faint click. I eased it open a hair's width at a time, and cool, fresh air rushed in, green with the scent of soil and grass. The other side of the door was stone that matched its surrounding walls, impossible to see unless you knew it was there. I peeked out on a large empty terrace, almost like a foyer, that had several arched passageways intersecting it. The one straight ahead emptied out onto rolling empty grounds covered with grass, still lit by the fading light of dusk. But something in the distance at the far end of the grounds caught my eye. A wide, curved double door set into a stone wall. A door that was strangely familiar. Stand watch, I signaled to Ren and Sinove as I stepped out onto the terrace, carefully hugging the walls and shadows. At the end of the terrace, I looked across the grassy grounds at the distant door, and I realized I was looking at a door I had already seen, but I had seen it from the other side. Jace had claimed it was only another exit.
There's nothing on the other side.
Except all of this. A cold fist gripped my spine. All of this. I looked up at the roof of a cave that seemed as high as the sky. It swept out over half the grounds like a wave poised to crash. Tendrils of vines hung from its ceiling. Tucked below it, against its wall, was a long house, shallow in depth, with multiple staggered terraces. Only steps away was another outbuilding. Where the wall of cave ended, more of the fortress wall began, obstructing it all from view. It was a hidden enclave right within Tor's watch. I skulked along the outside wall of the house, just another shadow creeping across its porches, hiding behind pillars, peeking in windows. I passed room after room of bedchambers and sitting rooms. And then I heard a low rumble of voices. I stopped and sweat flashed over my skin. I was both eager and afraid of what I would find. I listened, but the words were indiscernible. I moved closer to the sound, then ducked behind a pillar when I saw someone cross a room with doors that opened onto the broad terrace.
"Save some for me. We're almost out."
Another voice.
"More comes in the morning." "Morning is not now."
And still another voice.
"It will be a shame when this party is all over."
"This party won't end. Thanks to the Ballingers, our riches will only become greater."
Laughter erupted.
"The great battle will look like a spring picnic."
"Soon all the kingdoms will be under our thumb. We'll say jump, and they'll ask how high."
"Especially that bitch in Venda. She'll be in for a surprise when she arrives, and it won't be a royal welcome."
"She'll finally get what's coming to her."
"A noose."
There was a murmur of agreement.
"I still don't like that he took our only working weapon."
"Within a week, we'll have an arsenal. One small weapon won't matter. He's probably already used up all the loads practicing on trees."
There was a hearty round of guffaws. "A noose? An arsenal of weapons?"
"I'm going to need more supplies."
"No worries. The Ballingers are generous. They'll give us more. They're as eager for this as we are."
More laughter. Eager for what? What were Jace and his family planning? All the kingdoms under their thumbs? Was inviting the queen here only a trap?
"To the Ballingers, our generous patrons."
I heard the clink of glasses lifted in a toast, a chuckle, and then a long, unapologetic belch, followed by a stumble, a curse, and a wail as a shin or knee met an immovable object. I used that moment to peek around the pillar. It was the first thing I saw. A clear view of a moon-shaped scar on a wide forehead. My attention jumped to a deep cleft in a stubbled chin, and the man who wore both so infamously had white hair. It wasn't Erdsaf, but Captain Alarion. Jace's manipulations piled on. He had fed me one lie after another. Then the captain and two other men I didn't recognize stepped aside, and my throat went dry. Sitting on a divan behind them was Governor Sarva of Balwood. He was the one who had led the attack against the clans in Blackstone Square. After the great battle, all that was found of him was part of his charred breastplate with the Balwood insignia. He was believed dead. Sitting beside him was Chievdar Cardos, swigging back a mug of ale, another member of the Komazar's council, who was unaccounted for but believed dead. And seated at a table near them, picking at meat on a trencher and licking his fingers, was Bar, one of the Sanctum guards in the clan attack. I pushed back behind the pillar, pressing against it. How would I tell Sanove? Everything had just gotten more complicated. These men were as vile as the captain, maybe worse. Hated criminals of Venda. My mind whirled. Jace was harboring them all. A sour taste swelled on my tongue. "This beast will turn and kill you." Now we had many beasts. Take them all back? We had to. But was that even possible? Maybe, I thought. Maybe there was one way. I was going to need a hay wagon. When we were safely back in the kitchen at Dark Cottage, I told them. Yes, the captain's there. It was him with the white hair, just as I thought. Wren blew out a long, slow breath. We had done it. We had finally found him. But that's not all, I added cautiously. There are five others. I looked at Sinove and pressed her shoulders against the wall, trying to stave off her reaction. One of them is Bar. Sinove shook her head. But he's dead. In the battle, he... No, I said. Her mouth opened and I clapped my hand over it before she could scream. Muffled noises leaked between my fingers. Wren helped me hold her back, both of us using all our weight to keep her pinned in place. Tears streamed down her cheeks. We'll take him back, I whispered, just like the others. She moaned a violent, muffled objection. He will pay, Wren promised. But he goes back to face justice, like the queen wanted. The long ride will be the best torture we could inflict. The Chievdar who had killed Wren's parents had died in battle, but her lip trembled and her eyes brimmed with tears too, knowing Sinove's pain as her own. We stayed in our tense knot, holding back and holding on, Sinove's heaving breaths the only sounds in the room. Her shoulders finally went limp beneath our hands. Her breathing calmed and she nodded, resigned to her vows and duty. Evening was quickly falling, and we returned to the main house with our plans still forming, my hands still salty with Sinove's tears. We were just inside the door when I heard the dogs loosed. My legs ached as I walked the final steps back to my room, as if every bit of strength had finally been wrung from them. I was already raw with pain of my own, and Sinove's agony had only deepened it. I dreaded dinner tonight. I dreaded seeing Jace. How could I pretend I didn't know? How could he have hidden all this from me? Doors guarded by poisonous dogs that he claimed led nowhere? An invitation to the queen that was really a trap? A groundsman who was really a murderous fugitive? Weapons to dominate all the kingdoms? His little enclave was a dragon's dark den. Fool me once, Jace. My thoughts jumped, my own words taunting me. The thing about a mark is they've created lies in their head, a story they've invented that they desperately want to believe, a fantasy that merely needs to be fed. But this time, it was I who had been that round-mouthed fish breaking the surface of the water, following crumb after crumb, swallowing each one whole. I was the mark, the witless dupe of my own game. And Jace had played me expertly.
Chapter 44. Kazi.
Where have you been, Kazi?
I gasped, whirling toward the voice. Jace sat in the chair in the corner of my room, in the dark.
Here, let me.
He reached out and turned the wheel on the bedside lantern, just until I could see him, the rest of the room still cast in shadows. His face and voice were frighteningly void of any expression.
You didn't answer me, he said. I've been waiting quite a while. Where have you been?
You'll have to smooth it over with him. Apologize. Juggle, Kazi. Juggle as you always do.
None of your business, I answered. Get out.
I had no juggling left in me. Not in this moment. Not for him. His expression barely flinched, just the slightest lift of his chin. Cold. Detached. He stood.
I think I see the problem here. I didn't address you properly. I apologize. I should have called you
10. He took a step closer, his shoulders pulled back. He knew. My stomach squeezed.
I don't,
he warned. His gaze as sharp as a razor, his cool veneer vanished.
Don't even try to deny it. It's all obvious now, palming the keys, my ring, disappearing right beneath our noses, the girl at the settlement calling you 10 and you shutting her up.
His nostrils flared.
It's ironic, don't you think? All that self-righteous indignation you flung at me when we were in the wilderness because I was a thieving Ballinger? I should be laughing, shouldn't I?
He strained to keep his fury in check, but even in the dim light I saw his temples burning with fire. And then today? He stroked the bruise on his jaw where I had struck him.
In front of everyone at the arena, you screamed and lectured me on the Pravisi when you were nothing but a common thief yourself. Is that why you hate them so much, because they remind you of you?
My hands trembled. I swallowed, trying to maintain control.
Get out of my room, Jace, before I hurt you.
He stepped toward me.
I expect an answer, damn it! You mean you demand it, Patre, don't you?
I spit back at him.
Because you get whatever you want. You take whatever you want. You do whatever you want.
His eyes sparked, dissecting me, judging, blazing. The bruise on the side of his face was an angry purple.
I'm not leaving, he growled. Not until I get an answer.
My nails dug into my palms. He didn't blink. He would wait here until morning if he had to, fueling his own self-righteousness. My own rage suddenly tipped beyond a point I recognized, seams coming loose, ripping, popping, everything tearing free.
All right, Jace, I yelled. Here's your answer. Yes, I was a thief, but don't you dare call me a common one.
I flung my hands up in front of me.
Look at my fingers, Jace. Take a good long look at every single one, because I'm not missing any. That's how I got my name, and I'm proud of it.
In Venda, before the queen came, the Komizar's punishment for stealing was cutting off a fingertip, even if you were a child, even if you only stole a handful of bread. I was alone on the streets from the time I was 6, completely on my own. No one cared if I lived or died. Can you imagine that, Jace? I didn't grow up like you. I heard my voice getting louder, more heated, more poisonous, more out of control. I didn't pace, didn't move. I was stone-rooted to the floor.
I stole to survive. I had no family, no dining room table to sit at and pass pretty dishes, no carpets under my feet or chandeliers over my head, no servant to bring me food, no parties in the garden. I had to scavenge for every rotten mouthful I ever ate. I had no coats made by tailors. I wore rags upon rags to stay warm in winter. I lived in a hovel carved out of fallen ruins. No heat, no hot baths, no soap. If I did bathe at all, it was in icy water in the public wash basins. Sometimes I cut my hair off with a knife because it was so infested with vermin I couldn't feel my own scalp.
I stepped over to his bookshelf and swiped an armful of books to the floor.
And I had no tutors, no books, no pens or paper. If it couldn't be eaten, it had no use for me. My whole life revolved around my next meal and how to get it. I lived on the edge of death every day of my life until I became good at thieving, and I won't apologize for it.
His face had changed, the hardness gone, probably trying to imagine the filthy urchin I had once been.
What about your parents?
He asked. The poison racing through me pooled to ice in my veins. I shook my head.
I never knew my father. I don't know if he's alive, dead, or the Emperor of the Moon. I don't care.
I looked down. I knew what was coming next. The thing that always hung between us. Every other question was hinged to this one, 1,000 doors opening a single doorway.
And your mother? What happened to her?
I had never told anyone. Shame and fear perched in my gut, ready to spring.
My jaws ached, the words wedged behind them. I turned away and walked toward the door.
Fine, he yelled. Run away. Shut yourself off like you always do. Go live in whatever prison you've created for yourself.
I stopped at the door, shaking with rage. The prison that I created? A furious cloud swirled in my vision. I whipped back to face him, and his eyes latched onto mine.
Tell me, Cassie.
Clamminess crept over my skin, and I leaned against the door to steady myself. I felt some part of me splitting in two, one part still cowering, the other watching from 1,000 miles away like an uncertain observer. I was 6 when my mother was taken, I said. It was the middle of the night, and we were lying together on a raised pallet in our hovel. I was asleep when I felt her finger on my lips and heard her whisper, "Shh, Cassie, don't say a word." Those were the last words she ever said to me. She shoved me to the floor to hide me beneath the bed. And then I looked up at the ceiling, my eyes stinging.
And then what, Cassie?
My shoulders twitched, everything inside me shrinking, resisting. I watched. From beneath the bed, I watched a man come into our home. We had no weapons, only a stick propped in the corner. My mother tried to get to it. She didn't make it in time. I wanted to run to her, but we had signals, and she signaled me to be quiet and not move. So I didn't. I just lay there cowering beneath the bed while the man drugged my mother and carried her away. He said he'd get a good price for her. She was merchandise. He wanted me too, but couldn't find me. Come out, girl, he yelled, but I didn't move. My mother lied and told him I wasn't there. My vision blurred and Jace grew fuzzy. I lay in my own waste for 2 days under that bed, shaking, crying, too afraid to move. I was terrified he'd come back. He didn't. Neither did she. It took me years to learn how to sleep on top of a bed again. You asked me why an open world frightens me, Jace? Because it gives me nowhere to hide. That's been my prison for 11 years, but trust me, I didn't create it. I blinked, clearing my eyes, and I saw the dawning in his face.
11 years. That's why you wanted to know how long.
That's right, Jace. He was a Pravisi driver. While I was starving and freezing and thieving on the streets of Venda, and my mother ended up the gods know where, you were providing him with a warm, safe home. How wonderful for him.
That was 11 years ago. How can you be sure he was even Pravisi? Your memory, don't you dare question my memory, I growled. I'm good at details, and I've had to live with those every day since I was 6.
Some days I've prayed to the gods that I could forget. He drove in on a wagon that morning, 4 black stripes on his tarp. Jace was well aware that was a distinguishing mark of the Pravisi.
You were 6 years old. It was the middle of the night. It might not have even been the same man. He
was tall, Jace, like you, but thin, bony. He had dead white skin and long strands of greasy black hair. His eyes were shiny beads of onyx. You know the new cook's husband? Except for the eyes, he looked remarkably like him. I'm guessing he's about 35 by now, and his hands, as he forced drugs down my mother's throat, I saw the dark hair on his knuckles and a large mole on his right wrist. How's that for details? He didn't answer, as if he was already digging through 11 years of memories. You may have been a child 11 years ago, too, but you know them all by now, I said. Is there a driver who fits that description?
No,
he shouted, throwing his hands in the air. He turned away and paced the room.
There are no drivers like that.
How can... There was a tap at the door. I turned, swallowing my next words. We both stared at the door. Another light tap. I crossed the room and opened it. Lydia and Nash stood side by side, their eyes wide and worried. Nash, Lydia, I didn't know what else to say. Were you two fighting? Nash asked. His voice was small, delicate, and it stabbed me with its innocence. I stared into his frightened eyes. He looked like he had been punched in the stomach. I hated how easily innocence could be robbed, how quickly a child could go from plucking wish stalks at a pond's edge to clutching stolen bread beneath a coat. I knelt so we were eye to eye. No, of course not, I forced a smile. Just a loud discussion. But you were crying. Lydia reached out and wiped under my eye. Oh, that. I quickly swiped my hands over my cheeks. Only dust in my eyes from a long galloping ride, I said. But what's this? I reached behind both of their ears and frowned. Did you two forget to wash today? They grinned with wonder as I pulled a coin from behind each of their ears and clucked with feigned dismay. I tucked the coins into their palms.
What did you two want? Jace asked.
Mama wants Cassie to come down for supper early so she can talk about food. The kind the queen likes, Lydia added.
Jace told them we'd be down shortly. I watched them race along the hallway, laughing, forgetting about the shouting they'd heard, the tears they saw, and I wished all memories could be erased so easily.
Chapter 45. Jace.
Nash swirled his cream squash into three green circles. I looked at his small fingers gripping his spoon, playing with his food the same way I had when I was six. Lydia arranged the pieces of meat that Mother had cut for her into a sunburst around her plate. I was on the streets from the time I was six. I couldn't imagine either Nash or Lydia fending for themselves. I couldn't imagine them being all alone and the terror they would feel. I couldn't imagine that they would survive at all. Look at my fingers, Jace. Take a good long look. An image of Cassie's long, beautiful fingers with missing tips kept seeping through my mind. Why didn't she tell me before? All the times in the wilderness when I had asked. I didn't grow up like you. I had never seen a single tear in Cassie's eye. Not when she ran across burning sands that blistered her feet. Not when a labor hunter hit her across her face. Not when a raider nearly choked the life from her. But this, a memory 11 years old, made her unravel. I watched her struggle to hold it back, like she was trying to dissect her feelings from the facts. But when Lydia and Nash came to the door, she steeled herself and became someone else. How do you do that? I had asked as we walked to dinner. How do you go from anguish to pulling coins out from behind ears? It's an acquired skill, Jace. Something all thieves learn. I heard the sarcasm in her reply. I knew what she thought I had meant, that even her tears had been a shallow act. It was just the opposite. I watched her sacrifice part of herself for their sakes, like hiding a bleeding limb behind her back and pretending she wasn't in pain. Jace, you're picking at your food, Priya said, waving her fork at me. You're not hungry? I looked at my plate, untouched. I had no servant to bring me food. No parties in the garden. I wore rags upon rags to stay warm in winter. I remembered in the wilderness when she was ready to eat minnows before we had cooked them. I had to scavenge for every rotten mouthful I ever ate. And now I knew there were worse things than raw minnows, and she had eaten them. My mother eyed my full plate.
I can ask Natia to fix you something else, if you like.
No, I replied. This is fine. I stabbed a piece of meat and chewed. I made more of an effort to concentrate on the multiple conversations running around the table. They seemed fuller and louder tonight. Maybe it was an effort to avoid any uncomfortable silences, an effort to cover Jelaine's absence. To avoid the obvious, Cassie's outburst at the arena, though the evidence on my jaw was a little harder to ignore. Lydia had asked me what happened. "A fall," I answered, and that wasn't far from the truth. I had told Garvin to keep his revelation just between us, so at least no one knew she had once been a thief. And maybe, on occasion, she still was. She nicked the king. What did she take from him? And why? There were still so many questions I hadn't asked, things I wanted to know. How does an orphaned street thief become a premier guard of the queen? Where had she been in those hours I couldn't find her? But after Lydia and Nash left, she went into the bath chamber and closed the door. I heard her running water and splashing her face. When she came out, the redness in her eyes was gone. But it felt like she still teetered on an edge, and I was afraid to push her over it. My questions retreated, at least for a little while.
"More ale, Patre?"
Natia stood next to me, a pitcher poised in her hand over my drained tankard. I nodded. "Thank you." Apparently, I was more thirsty than I was hungry. Sinove was always chatty, but tonight more so, hardly finishing one sentence before she began another. Even Ren, the quiet one with searing eyes who always filled me with some level of trepidation, was more talkative than usual. Aram and Samuel hung on every word as she explained the history of the Zeeth, a weapon of the Marasi clan that she hailed from. Cassie spoke enthusiastically with my mother about foods the queen preferred, as if we hadn't just had a screaming conversation in her room. As if she hadn't just broken down and sobbed in front of me. As if none of it had happened at all.
"Maybe we can meet with the cook in the morning," Cassie said, "and discuss which dishes she would recommend. I know the queen has a fondness for vagabond food."
Something about it all was off. It didn't feel right. The cook and her husband had come in several times to replenish dishes or take them away. I stared at the husband each time. He was reserved, aloof, the opposite of his wife. Since they had been here, she had expressed her gratitude to me several times for giving them work. The first day, she had patted her abdomen and said their family would soon be expanding, so she was especially grateful. He had shown no emotion. He just kept going about his work in the kitchen, chopping vegetables with quick, smooth movements. She was right about one thing. He was good with a knife. And Cassie was right about another thing. His appearance. Now, every time he walked through the kitchen door, his appearance turned my stomach. What I had told Cassie was true. There was no Pravizi driver who looked like him. But there used to be. Now he worked for us. My father had hired him a year ago. "She's racked with guilt, Jace. I've tried talking to her. You have to speak to her." My mother had intercepted me after dinner, pulled me aside. "Talk to her." I watched Cassie walk away to her room. Our room. I wanted to go after her, but I saw the worry in my mother's eyes. I tapped on Jelaine's door and called to her. She didn't answer. I knocked a little louder. "Jelaine, open up. I need to talk to you." A Patre never apologizes for decisions he's made. And my father never did. This was one of his deathbed instructions, right after he had said I'd be faced with countless decisions. I didn't regret pulling Jelaine from the arena. I didn't regret our talk in the study or reprimanding her, but my anger was still loose and hot when we were in the dining room that night. When I had seen Cassie pinned beneath Fertig and soaked in blood, something furious and ugly had ripped through me. I wanted to tear something apart. Or someone. I shamed Jelaine in front of the family. She was 16 years old. She made a mistake, a serious one that nearly cost us our lives, but she was still my sister. She was family. And Patre's made mistakes, too. "I shouldn't have shamed you in front of the family," I whispered through the door. "I'm sorry." There was no answer. If the job of Patre were easy, I would have given it to someone else. Sometimes I wished he had. I wasn't just having to live with my bad decisions, but his too,
even decisions that seemed right at the time but now were all wrong, ones that had grown rotten over time, like forgotten eggs in the larder. I stepped lightly through the hall.